we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Twitter restores the Zero Hedge account, admits a mistake. And it's official, the Quadriga CX exchange was a Ponzi scheme, sort of. The European Union is to charge Amazon with antitrust violations. And Zoom shuts down Chinese dissidents who were marking the Tiananmen Square massacre. This and more on Axis of Easy, number 150. Hello, everybody. Mark Jeftovic here with another edition of the Axis of Easy Weekly Digest. This is episode 150, and the show notes for this week's show will be at accessofeasy.com/150. And last week's quote was, emergencies have always been the pretext on which the safeguards of the individual have been eroded. That was Friedrich Hayek, and nobody got it. Somebody guessed John Locke, but it was Hayek. Maybe Locke said something similar. This week's quote is, our minds tell us and history confirms that the great threat to freedom is the concentration of power. Remember the rules. There's no searching this up online. The first person to post the source of the quote to the show notes page gets their next domain or web hosting renewal on us. So, Zoom shuts down Chinese dissidents marking the Tiananmen Square massacre in an online meeting. So that report surfaced last week that Zoom had terminated the accounts of student survivors of the Tiananmen Square massacre, which took place on June 4th in 1989. The Financial Times reports that the video call was set up by people who were physically in the U.S., but it included attendees from China. Zoom claims the call and the accounts were terminated for, quote, violating local law, end quote, which means local Chinese state law, because in China, it's more or less illegal to refer to the massacre of student activists as anything other than an incident. What actually happened on that day is the army began firing into the crowd of students who had gathered for ongoing protests, and they killed at least 300 is the number that is most widely estimated. Not a lot of people know that today because mainstream media and tech platforms usually bend over backwards to accommodate the Chinese Communist Party's pressure to keep a lid on this narrative. We reported last year that good old woke Twitter dutifully suspended a plethora of Chinese dissident accounts around the time of the anniversary, while Thomson Reuters did their level best to keep a lid on news stories that were describing the incident for what it was, a massacre. The news also broke that the China Daily, which is a propaganda outlet of the Chinese Communist Party, paid various U.S. news outlets a total of $19 million since 2016 to run advertisements that looked like editorials. Washington Post and The Wall Street Journal received $4.6 million and $6 million respectively. The high-powered Foreign Policy Journal took $2.4 million, and smaller payments were made to the New York Times and Des Moines Register. Twitter restores Zero Hedge account, admits mistake. So as we were all headed into the weekend this past Friday night, the folks at Zero Hedge got a short email from Twitter stating that they had suspended the independent news outfit's account in error and had restored access to it. If you remember, on January 31st, Twitter permanently banned Zero Hedge after it published an article speculating on the possible Wuhan laboratory origins of COVID-19. That's a notion that has since graduated from conspiracy theory to being championed by a Nobel laureate and is the subject of investigations by Western intelligence agencies. So now, maybe Zero Hedge is going to get a blue check mark. Joanna Hoffman says Facebook is destroying society. So while participating in a panel as part of the 2020 COGX conference, she was responding to a question about the cult of leadership in the technology industry. She's a former Steve Jobs lieutenant, and she had some interesting thoughts about Facebook. So while she conceded that she respected what the company had accomplished, she mused that quote, "As I look at Facebook, for example, I keep thinking, are they really that ignorant, or is this motivated by something darker than what appears?" She further opined that, quote, "destroying the very fabric of democracy, destroying the very fabric of human relationships, and peddling an addictive drug called anger. You know, it's just like tobacco. It's no different than the opioids. We know anger is addictive. We know we can attract people to our platform and get engagement if we get them peed off enough. So therefore, what? We should capitalize on that each and every time," end quote. Joanna Hoffman was a key part of the Next team and the original Apple Macintosh team, and as I said, key senior advisor to Steve Jobs. She recently was hired to another high-level advisory role by a Spanish AI company called Sherpa. Also, speaking of social networks, a direct Facebook challenger called MeWe is taking the opposite track from Facebook. They're enshrining all users' ownership of their data in a data bill of rights. And also, contrary to Facebook, who regularly changes up their algorithm for what goes in your feed in order to maximize their ad revenues, MeWe also puts the control over what appears in your feeds and in what order it appears in directly into your control panel. I forgot I had a MeWe account, and I'm just simply Mark Jeftovic over there. If you grab an account, that's how you can link up to me there. It's official. Quadriga CX was a Ponzi, sort of. The Ontario Securities Commission, the OSC, has issued a report stating that the Quadriga CX cryptocurrency exchange was a Ponzi scam. The ill-fated exchange imploded when CEO Gerald Cotton apparently died unexpectedly in India, taking the private keys to the exchange wallets with him. The OSC found that Cotton had been acting fraudulently when he used client balances to fund his lavish lifestyle, which included a private yacht, and to trade using bogus accounts. It appears as though Quadriga CX somehow lost a substantial amount of client funds and then lost more when Cotton tried to trade his way back from his losses using more commingled funds on other exchanges. So the reason I put sort of a Ponzi in the title is because this doesn't appear to me as if Cotton was operating Quadriga for the sole purpose of defrauding depositors in a pyramid-style scam. Rather, it looks like he ended up embezzling client funds in an effort to try to uncapsize a rapidly sinking ship. Breach of the week. 300,000 Nintendo accounts in NNID hack. We haven't had a breach of the week in a while. I'm sure they're still happening all the time, just none of them have kind of gotten on my radar. But Nintendo posted an announcement to their Japanese support page that a breach of their Nintendo Network ID system, NNID, in April appears to be worse than originally thought. The company initially set the number of affected customers at 160,000, but have since uncovered another 140,000 impacted accounts. Details exposed include credit card and PayPal details, as well as name, address, phone, and emails of afflicted accounts. The company forced password resets and notified the original 140,000 accounts back in April, and they are notifying the rest now. European Union to charge Amazon with antitrust violations. So just recently in Access of Easy 144, we covered how Amazon knocks off third-party sellers using their system by data mining the platform for successful products and then creating their own versions of them and undercutting the others. The Wall Street Journal reported on it, although it's been going on for years. Both the US and EU regulators were looking at the antitrust implications of it. So now the Wall Street Journal is reporting that it looks like the EU is going to be first out of the gate with their antitrust ringer, Margaret Vestager, preparing to file charges imminently. Vestager's name is well known in Silicon Valley, having already taken multiple billions of dollars away from Alphabet, Google's parent company, in three prior antitrust actions. So now it looks like it's Amazon's turn. Amazon and IBM moved to curtail law enforcement agency use of facial recognition. So all the way back in Access of Easy 80, we reported on Amazon's recognition facial recognition suite, which it had integrated with its newly acquired Ring doorbell company and was marketing aggressively to law enforcement agencies. In our original report, we quoted from the Amazon patent application, which said the suite would create a method that, quote, the police can use to match the faces of people walking by a doorbell camera with a photo database of persons they deem suspicious, end quote. So now Amazon has announced that in light of increased scrutiny on police methods and data showing that facial recognition software has flaws that present more false positives toward people of color, they are putting a one-year moratorium on its use by LEA, and the move comes after a similar move by IBM. On a similar note, the Electronic Frontier Foundation says you have a constitutional right to film the police. They put a primer up on their website. It contains your legal rights to film the police with your smartphone. The article is specific to U.S. citizens and their First Amendment rights, but while searching around, I came across some references that imply that it is also legal here in Canada to film the police as well. The EFF issues some basic guidelines and things to keep in mind if you do film the police, such as police cannot order you to move because you are recording. They can order you to move for public safety reasons, even if you are recording. Police cannot search your mobile device without a warrant from a judge, and they can't order you to unlock your phone or to delete any footage or pictures. You can record video and audio. Some police have tried to assert that recording audio violates U.S. wiretap laws, but most of those attempts have failed in court. That said, there's still a possibility that police may still act contrary to these realities and take or destroy your device. So I've been looking around for ways that you could live stream or sync your footage to an off-device service in real time in case something like that happens. There's been a few apps that do this, but they haven't seemed to be maintained over the past few years. They're not really current. I found something called CopWatch on the iTunes store. Only has one review, hasn't been in the news since 2014, 2015, but I did download it and I plan to test it out. And what it does is send footage to a YouTube account. Honda shuts down factories after cyber attack. They shut down two manufacturing plants, one in Ohio, the other in Turkey, after they were hit with a cyber attack on June 9th. And the attack is rumored to be a ransomware attack, according to researchers at Malwarebytes. It's a relatively new strain called ECANS/snake, which I just realized snake is ECANS spelled backwards. Anyhow, it was first sighted in the wild in January 2020. It's written in Golang. The threat actor behind the attack appears to be interested in industrial control systems, according to analysis by another security firm called Dragos Research. So both of the articles, Malwarebytes and the Dragos analysis, pretty good reading. Singapore plans to deploy contact tracing device to all citizens. So after trying to deploy a smartphone app that only achieved limited uptake, the government of Singapore will soon be deploying a small portable device to all 5.7 million citizens of the city-state. The device will facilitate coronavirus contact tracing. It doesn't need a mobile device and will be small enough to carry in a purse or be tethered to, you know, on a little tether. The government did not state if it would be mandatory or not. And last week on the Access of Easy channel was the Salon Number 8. We are all in on Bat Guana futures. Jesse Hirsch, Charles Hugh Smith, and myself continued our exploration on how this all shakes out and what happens when the gulf between the official narrative and observed reality becomes too wide for our credulity to bridge. Jesse also wrote a couple of good articles on the MetaViews channel, one on Facebook as a shadow government, And he continued his coverage of government social credit schemes. Charles put out a couple of good ones as well on what I call the Fab Four of global dystopia. That would be Kafka, Huxley, Orwell, and Marx. And another one on the fully financialized economy. So you'll find all of that over on accessofeasy.com. We also have a YouTube channel for the salons, which seems to be getting a bit of traction. So check us out over there as well. Give us a rating on the podcast platforms is also going to be a big help. And the show notes for this week's edition, once again, accessofeasy.com/150. Remember, stay sane, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see you all next week. Thank you.
With your friend.